This is Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Leonard Belov. I'm interviewing Jerry Ostro and Howard Braun is the other interviewer. Would you please tell me your address?
Well, my permanent address now is 3719 Mykonos Court, Boca Raton, Florida. My Pittsburgh address is 5048 Fifth Avenue.
This is July 6th, 1944.
94.
1994, pardon me. What would you like us to call you, Jerry?
Jerry, sure.
All right, Jerry. What do you know, or what can you tell us of your immediate family?
My immediate family, you mean my children?
Father, mother, siblings.
My mother and father. My mother came from Poland. My father from Russia. My mother was born in this country. My dad came as a child of little less than 2 years old. My father died in 1960, and my mother died in 1982, I believe, right?
Their names.
My mother's name was Esther, and my father's name was Charles. Was really Isaac, but he never liked that, he said, in school, and so he adopted the name of Charles, and that's what he was known as. His parents, I knew both his mother and father, my grandfather Aaron and his mother Sarah, when we lived in Philadelphia. My dad's dad was a remarkable man, very tall, big man for being Jewish in those days, and was a great cabinet maker and made violins, but also very, very strong. He had the strongest hands of any man I ever knew. He could take a beer bottle, and he'd wear a leather glove and just squeeze it and break it. His hands were so powerful. He would often pick me up and by the neck when I guess when I was bad and shake me, you know, and yell at me. But I remember him very fondly. My mother's parents, I didn't know her mother. She died when I was very, very young. Her father, Wolf or William, I knew quite well, and he died, I guess, when I was about 10 or 11 years old. And I have one famous relative, I guess. My dad's sister had a child who became Molly Picon, who I guess in the Jewish world was quite famous. As a matter of fact, my daughter used to kid us about it until Molly died a couple years ago. And she had four columns in the New York Times, and my daughter, I apologize, she was famous.
She was, I remember her.
Of course, she was well known. She was not only the Jewish world, but she played in many movies, and she played in television shows, many of them. Rough, a great person, fine, great sense of humor, great command of languages, knew 7, 8, 9 languages, spoke them all fluently. As a matter of fact, I recently, a year or so ago, got a copy of Yiddle with a Mit a Fiddle that she made in Poland in 1932 or 33. It's a black and white film, but it's fun. We look at it once in a while. It's in Yiddish. Now, I do have famous children. Of course, I think they're famous. I'm lucky. I have three sons, one of whom now is owner of this business. I have a son who lives in San Diego, who is with the district attorney's office as an attorney, and they're a prosecuting attorney. And I have one son that's a national sales manager for a...
Your name's the first son.
My oldest son, William, lives in Pittsburgh, is a national sales manager for a large textile company. My middle son, Richard, lives in San Diego and is a practicing attorney with the district attorney's office there. my youngest son Douglas, or Woody as he's known, owns the business and runs this business. My daughter Carol lives in London with her husband and four children. She was a graduate of the Yale Graduate School of Drama and has been connected with the theater, ran theaters and was active in New York before they moved to London, and hopes to continue her career when she comes back to this country, which might be within the next year. I have 12 grandchildren, 10 of whom are natural, 2 because of a second marriage.
To get back to your early years, what was your home life like? What was the atmosphere, the religious atmosphere, let's say?
Normally, high holy days, major holidays, Friday night Shabbos, lighting of the candles and the brachas then, but it was not a Orthodox or even semi-Orthodox style of living. We lived in a neighborhood that was only sparsely Jewish. In Philadelphia was our growing up in Oak Lane, North Philadelphia. We had moved from West Philadelphia. And was a very, there were some Jews, and I had friends who were Jews, but I had many who were not. And of course, the fights that went on among the groups that we all faced coming home from school. They didn't bus us. My mother didn't pick me up in the rain. I walked to school and came home for lunch and walked back and came home afterwards, and it was a mile and a half to school, and nobody worried. I didn't melt or didn't die from the exposure. But Philadelphia life, in those days, though it was tough, I grew up in the Depression. My father worked and we managed. He was a salesman for a large clothing manufacturer and would be away for 4 or 5 weeks at a time, 2 or 3 times a year. But my mother was a very strong-willed woman, ran a strict house. It was no monkey business. You did as you were told. One of the things that I get a kick out of in today's world, I hear the abuse that some teachers get because they yell at their children. If I misbehaved in school and my mother ever found out, she would kill me. The teacher was always right. There was no monkey business. Teachers had respect in those days. There was discipline in the school. There was no playing around the way there is today. But I had not good friends. I was active in school. I was on the choir. I was on the swimming team. I was on the tennis team, though I was the fifth man. And I played baseball. And in spite of not having much, you struggle, but it was a good life. I usually had a job on Saturday, worked in A.S. Beck's shoe store, and you made, $2.50 or $3 for the day. And when you got to sell shoes and you made PMs, boy, you could make $5 or $6. You were rich. Mm-hmm. We were able, and I remember if you saved up enough money to be able to go to New York from Philadelphia, you could take the train, go to a show, take a girl, go to a show, have a bite to eat, and come back for $10. I hate to tell you what I paid for sitters last winter in Florida for a couple hours. But I guess I certainly had no complaints. I was a healthy child. Was only sick once that I remembered. And I remember I had double pneumonia, and I guess it was the only time I was really very sick. And I remember waking up. I must have been delirious for a couple days. And my grandfather, my dad's dad, Aaron, was sitting by the bed. And he was the first one I saw when I remember waking up. I must have been 10 or 11 years old at that time. But it was a good life. I have 2 sisters, both of whom are still alive, live in Philadelphia.
Do you remember the name of your elementary school?
Kinsey.
Kinsey. And high school?
Almy High School.
Mm-hmm. Almy High School.
And Wagner Junior High. Don't ask me how I remember. I can't remember what happened yesterday.
In the elementary, the junior...
Wagner Junior High School.
And Olney.
And Olney High School.
How do you spell that?
O-L-N-E-Y.
Sorry.
That's an English word. That comes from town in England.
And what type of influences did you have in school that influenced you?
Well, I think that the sports teams that I played on, the coaches were all very disciplined and demanding and taught you that the necessity that nothing came easy, even to the most, the best athlete, born athletes, you still had to work at it, and that it required a determination and an effort that has impressed me and stayed with me my whole life. I've had several teachers that inspired me that seemed to always want to push you to do things more than you thought you could do, beyond your abilities, and you found that you had capabilities within you that you never dreamed possible, and everybody does. And these were dedicated teachers. I am not aware today what the schools are like, but in those days, the teachers that taught loved teaching and loved working with children. And though they all may not have been, the best people, they took their work seriously, I think, and made you take it seriously. And of course, my parents, both of whom came from very poor backgrounds and from immigrant parents, realized that the important thing in this world was education, and so they didn't let you let up, they pounded on you. There was no, every night you did your homework, and my mother watched and checked it and made sure that it was done correctly. So for that reason, you learned a certain discipline. My mother made you had to be neat. You had to keep things right. You had to do things right, and she didn't. Though she was strict, she was not nasty or anything, but she just ran a very tight household.
What about your religious education?
Bar mitzvah. At a local shul, small shul near our home where we could walk. And as I said, went to cheder and learned, but nothing after that. And as I grew up, going through college and all, became sort of a Jewish atheist, I guess you could say. But that's just a spell. Most of
you remember the name of the shul?
No, I don't have any idea. It was on Ogun's Avenue, about 6200.
On what avenue?
Ogun's, O-G-O-N-T-Z.
How would you contrast your life, the life in Philadelphia, with the life in Pittsburgh here?
Well, you're talking about two different times and really two different communities. Philadelphia is a rather snobbish town, very class-oriented. Jewish population in Philadelphia is a very, very old population, goes back to pre-revolutionary times. The Frank family, there's a few families there that remember that Ivanhoe, Rebecca, she was a Philadelphia girl, beautiful Jewish girl. That he wrote about, that he knew. And the country club life and all, there was a very old, rich Jewish community. And if you weren't in that, you were excluded. I mean it, completely excluded. Pittsburgh, that just is not true at all. Pittsburgh, I found to be a very unique community. Basically, a steel, strong union, blue-collar town, but in spite of that, has pulled itself up by the bootstraps and has become a major medical and cultural center in the United States. And I think probably Pittsburgh is the only major city in the United States that still has a viable downtown and a viable inner city. If you go downtown in Pittsburgh, there's not gates on all the stores. People go downtown at night. There's restaurants, the symphonies down there, the ballet. And though there is crime, I'm not saying there is not. It's not nearly, you couldn't do that in downtown Detroit or downtown St. Louis or downtown Atlanta or downtown Chicago. You have to be careful. It just doesn't happen. But I think that part of that that I have found is that Pittsburgh has the oldest continuous Polish, German, Slovakian, Italian, and Jewish neighborhoods in the United States. Now, you wouldn't find that any other city. Even though, let's say that the Jewish population in Squirrel Hill goes back to 1915, to really about the time it started. You know that, how many years that is? It's almost 80 years. Show me a city where the Jews stayed in one part. The Jewish community is now ready to commit $45 million to Squirrel Hill with the new Renaissance program. You won't find that anywhere else. And yet, in spite of the diversity, I think they've managed. I gave a lot of credit to Davy Lawrence, who I thought was a great mayor. And when after the war, when the first problem with the blacks occurred, put his foot down, stopped it right then and there, and I think started on the right track. And another thing about Pittsburgh that you can't compare to a city like Philadelphia, in spite of almost since 1932 being a Democratic-controlled city, there's really very little graft in this city. I'm sure there's minor, but you look at Philadelphia, Chicago, New York, these guys steal by the millions. And it's amazing to me that it's never happened here. And it just is true. It's a peculiar thing. And I'm sure there are many other reasons for all this, but whatever it is, it has been. They say it's the topography and the rivers and these things that have kept it together. But there are suburbs, and the suburbs are growing. But in spite of that, the city is still maintaining itself, and I think I would put it up against any other major old community as being the most viable inner city that exists in the United States today, outside of New York, of course. A great place to raise children when I raised mine. Of course, that was before busing and all that silly, whether they spend today 22% of the school money goes for busing and security. It becomes ridiculous. But my kids walked out our back door up the hill across the ball field to the school. No one had to walk with them, they went on their own, came home for lunch.
What about the, say, in your adolescent years, how about recreation in your...
Well, our recreation in those days was... We played after school, we played roller hockey, we played baseball, I played on a, in Philadelphia in those days, they had, during the summer, companies would sponsor, they didn't have pony leagues and American Legion baseball, but companies would sponsor teams of under 16 or under 12, or around 12 to 16, and I played for the Kearney Lumber Junior baseball team. And we once won the city championship for our age. And we had a ball field that was a block away from my house where we played, so this was easy. That's when I was younger. By the time I got to junior high and high school, of course, and being occupied with the different sports, most of my afternoons were taken up in practices for the swimming or tennis team or baseball, and then I would get home in time to eat dinner and study and go to bed. It was a busy life, no question about it, but a pleasant one, and one that I can look back upon with joy, really. growing up. I had good friends, active social life, even though, you know, we went to people's houses, so we didn't have money to go out on dates all the time. But the girls always seemed to manage to have parties at their homes on Saturday nights and gatherings. So,
what years were you in high school?
From I graduated high school in January 1940.
Then,
all right. How about your education after high school?
I went to University of Pennsylvania for the 6 months from January to June. And then I transferred...
To Philadelphia?
Yes, University of Pennsylvania. And then I transferred to William & Mary, where I had a partial swimming scholarship. And I graduated there in January 43. Yeah, 43. Spent one summer at...
42 or 3?
43. Spent one summer at Cornell. That's why I graduated so quickly. Took, you know, we took 19, 20 credits. Mm-hmm. I was...
What degree?
B.S. in chemistry. Pre-med, real.
Was there any graduate study?
No, I went right into the Army. Left school
that's,
in...
That's in 1944?
43.
Oh, 43.
Yeah, 43.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out what he did.
Where did you... what can you tell me about your Army?
I was a flight cadet, pilot training. Graduated as a pilot, second lieutenant, and went to Keesler Field for co-pilot training, then joined a crew and went overseas.
Where did you go to meet overseas?
England, 8th Air Force, B-24s.
They were stationed in England?
Mm-hmm. Norwich.
Hmm?
Norwich. N-O-R-W-I-C-H. We had a, it was a great field. It was a had been a permanent RAF base taken over by the Americans. Jimmy Stewart was stationed at our base, not in our division, but it was a headquarters there. And we would see him now and then. And we flew out of there all our missions.
Your missions were? Where were your missions?
Mostly over Germany.
Mostly
over. Yeah. Oh, a couple times. Denmark, Norway, we hit some heavy water plants once or twice. But most of them were different places in Germany. 33 missions.
That's a lot.
They started, oh yes,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had some rough ones, but we were very fortunate. That was a sturdy plane. We once bombed Cologne at 12,000 feet, which is crazy, because we normally bombed at 21, 22,000. And any aircraft fire is very accurate. It's 10 times less accurate at 20,000 than it is at 10.
Mm-hmm.
And out of our 12 planes, only 5 of us came back. Our plane had 3/4 feet of the right wing blown off. Ours had a twin tail, and half of the left tail was hanging. We had holes in the fuselage you could crawl through, 2 engines out, and nobody hurt. Oh, we got back. But,
over which airport was that? Over which city was that?
Cologne.
Yeah, Cologne.
Yeah, I remember that one. That was B-24?
Yes, B-24s. The 1st and 3rd Division were 17s. The 2nd Division and the 8th Air Force was B-24s.
2nd Division.
Was there anything else that you would like to care to talk about as far as the Army, the Air Force?
No, it was an interesting, and you know, we felt differently then. There was no question in my mind. I could have gone to med school, and the Army wanted to send me, but I didn't like Germans. I was very unhappy. Very strongly, and I had people used to say, well, didn't you feel guilty about dropping bombs on people? I said, not as long as they were Germans, I didn't feel guilty. I didn't lose one night's sleep over that, I can assure you. And they looked, you know, the people today would look at me like I was crazy, but I can be honest with you, I felt I had a job to do, and I was glad I could be part of it. And I can say that for all the problems you might have flying, it's a hell of a lot better than flopping around in the mud. At least when we came back, the Red Cross was there, you had a brandy and a cup of coffee and a hot roll, and after your debriefing, you then could go and take, we used to vote every month whether you wanted hot water or heat, and we always voted for hot water, because it was nothing like a hot bath after one of those. And then you'd go have something to eat, have a couple drinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What can you tell me about your courtship and marriage?
Oh, my courtship and marriage. In Williamsburg, Virginia, where I went to school, there were two Greek restaurants on Duke of Gloucester Street. And it was funny. Some people always went to one and some went to the other. And I always went to the one on the left side. And one time when we were there, we always ate there because you bought a meal ticket. And I think it was $5.50. And that could feed me for the whole week, including breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Believe me. And once we were in there at night, I guess having a beer and a hamburger or something. 1942. And a friend I knew came in with a young lady I thought rather attractive, and I didn't say anything, and they, I guess, sat down and ate, and afterwards I saw him a couple days later. I asked him, I said, is that your girlfriend? He said, oh, no, it was just something I took out, somebody asked me or something. I said, what was her name? And he told me, and I said, do you mind if I call her up? He said, no, go ahead. And so I called her up, and she didn't know me, but she said, I asked if we could have, you know, go out in the afternoon, take a walk, something, and she agreed, and we went together then, most of school. Then she left, she had some problems with family and went back home. I continued at school, then she went to Penn State, but we corresponded. I had seen her in New York.
Name.
Helen Struminger. Struminger.
Struminger.
Mm-hmm. And we had corresponded all through the Army and everything. Nothing really that serious, but we were, I guess you could say, very close at that point. And when I graduated cadet school, I stopped at Penn State on the way home to Philadelphia and spent the day with her. And I realized that she was really a great girl. I might be missing out on something. And we became a little more serious, but I knew I was going overseas and there was nothing I could do. I went back into training, and before I went overseas, we decided we would become engaged, and we became engaged in New York, and that was in early 44. Her parents lived in New York, where her home was, in Brooklyn at that time. She was born and raised in Merrick, Long Island, way out on the island. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we corresponded while I was in England, and when I came back after the war was over and came back at the end of, in the middle of June, I guess, in 1945 from England, we got married at the Astor Hotel on July 1st, 1945. And her father, who happened to be just one great guy, saved up a lot of gas stamps, and he gave us the car, and we took off and went up to Niagara Falls and came back. And it was funny, we came down, stopped at Scarron Manor on the way back and stayed there for a few days. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a comedian who had been in the dress business. I can't think of his first name, but his last name was Cohen.
Myron Cohen.
And he was just starting out then, and he was great. And then my cousin Molly Pecan came.